From the KSFR newsroom, At Noon looks at the top local news headlines for this Monday, August 19th. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics is out with new unemployment numbers for the month of July. For New Mexico, the seasonally adjusted statistics show the state with a 0.1% increase to 6.9% versus 6.8% in June and 6.7% in May. Nationwide, western states continue to have the highest regional unemployment rate, pegged at 7.9%. The public is invited to attend a memorial service for Representative Stephen Easley tomorrow at 2 p.m. in the Roundhouse Rotunda. The El Dorado resident was a freshman Democratic representative for District 50 and died at age 60 last week of undisclosed causes after a recent hospitalization. Easley's district runs through Santa Fe, Bernalillo, Torrance, and Valencia counties. Commissioners in each can nominate a replacement of their choosing, irrespective of party affiliation, with Governor Martinez making the final selection. Today's meeting of Santa Fe's Finance Committee looks at that proposal to create a local farm stand program, selling produce from community gardens and orchards. The idea has already passed muster with the Food Policy Council, the Sustainable Santa Fe Commission, and the Public Works Committee. It arrives before full City Council next week. Also being considered at today's meeting is the proposal to allow expanded areas for beer sales and consumption at Fort Marcy Park. A new international study in partnership with researchers from our Los Alamos National Laboratory says that the melting of Greenland's massive ice sheet and its effects on rising sea levels may not be as great as previously projected. It's long been feared that ice melt from Greenland's glaciers would itself contribute to rising seas and would further accelerate the depositing of greater amounts of ice in ocean waters. In a paper published in Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, Greenland's ice melt is expected to raise sea levels some 4 to 6 inches by 2100. Ranked choice voting in Santa Fe, approved back in 2008, will not be implemented in the upcoming March 2014 municipal elections. That's the assertion of City Clerk Yolanda Vigil, as reported over the weekend by the Santa Fe New Mexican. Ranked choice seeks to eliminate runoffs by retabulating votes when a given contest does not produce a candidate garnering more than 50%. Voters cast ballots indicating their order of preference for a number of candidates, rather than just one individual. The process cannot be used by the voting machines currently certified for use in New Mexico. Santa Fe County Clerk Geraldine Salazar told KSFR earlier this month that new machines, too, may be hard-pressed to meet all the requirements.
We need to understand that these new machines may or may not have the ability to tabulate ranked choice votes, depending on several factors, including that machines are offered by the various vendors, how much they will cost, and most importantly, whether such tabulating machines can be certified to be consistent with New Mexico law requiring paper ballots. I haven't heard any word about any machines being certified for ranked choice voting. So as far as implementation, there is still no definite time of when that will occur.
The Los Lunas gun store that sponsored a prairie dog killing contest last week reports that at least 500 and perhaps as many as 1,500 of the creatures were killed by contestants vying for a new rifle. KRQE-TV's website says the prize went to a man with 239 kills. The store says it plans to hold another contest in December. Meanwhile, Republican Representative Terry McMillan of Los Lunas says he'll support an effort to ban such contests in the next session of state lawmakers. It's been 1 year since Santa Fe Community College President Anna Cha Guzman took her post, and today the school's governing board will conduct a performance review evaluation. In recent days, Guzman has cited some of her accomplishments, which include an uptick in both student enrollment and achievement. Critics have pointed out that a number of teachers and staff have opted to take early retirement since Guzman took over. A meeting in Santa Fe today hopes to network small businesses with our two national laboratories. The meetings are twice annual affairs, partnered by the State Economic Development Department's New Mexico Small Business Assistance Program, in association with Los Alamos and Sandia. The labs loan their expertise free to teams of business concerns grappling with technical challenges. Funding, ranging from $20,000 to $100,000 per lab, is available for projects deemed well-defined and having good potential for success. That meeting gets underway at 2 p.m. at the Santa Fe Business Incubator at 3900 Paseo del Sol. A heads-up to Santa Fe motorists, as a number of city streets will today see the start of roadwork expected to be completed by early October. It's part of the city's 2013 summer maintenance program and involves both fixing surface deformities and laying asphalt sealant materials to prevent water from infiltrating pavement. Some 30 roads will be involved, with work on each one expected to last several days. And weather for Santa Fe. The summer monsoon pattern is now favoring Arizona more than New Mexico. Look for mostly sunny skies with highs in the low 80s and a 20% chance for late-day showers. Our best chance for any rain this week will be tomorrow, with precipitation probabilities pegged at 40%. Currently, Santa Fe temperature 81 degrees. This is Dan Garrity for KSFR News. At noon, we'll continue in just a moment.
Support comes from New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union, where the more you participate in your not-for-profit financial cooperative, the more money you earn. For details on Earn Your Return, go to nmefcu.org or visit their branch on St. Michael's Drive.
At noon on KSFR, now segues to today's feature stories. Governor Martinez has announced plans to dedicate $1.5 million in capital outlay to fund river restoration efforts. Here to discuss it with us is Beth Bardwell, the Director of Freshwater Conservations for the New Mexico Audubon Society. Beth, tell us about these funds and the efforts they will now support.
Well, I think the governor's commitment to investing in the health of our rivers is to be commended. Healthy rivers are the lifeblood of our land, our economy, and our way of life in New Mexico. And the benefits from healthy rivers to New Mexico are many. Clean water, protection from flooding, resilience in drought, which we're experiencing a lot of these days, better opportunities for bird watching, fishing, hunting, floating. They're just significant benefits to all New Mexicans across the state. And I think the governor, in her comments at the press event, identified a number of objectives for this funding. And I think, you know, those include improving fishing, hunting, bird watching, putting the brake on flood flows, addressing water quality issues. I think there are a number of problems our rivers are facing that could be corrected or addressed through state funds.
Even without the presence of drought, would these restorative efforts be needed?
Sure. I think that drought can exacerbate some of the problems our rivers are facing. Reduction in flows, increased concentration of pollutants in water, and by working to either restore flows or restore the ability to capture and neutralize pollutants, these types of activities can help in periods of drought. I mean, very often drought can also be accompanied by other extreme events like flooding. And so healthy rivers can help store some of those floodwaters. That's how rivers evolved and over time, is that they can create these meanders and these floodplains that can capture and act like sponges and absorb those flood flows. And so restoring rivers allows us to take advantage of those natural services that healthy rivers provide.
Beth, as you look at our state's waterways, where do you see the greatest need for conservation help?
I think that's a great question. You know, do we have a report card on the health of New Mexico rivers? And I wish I could say at this point I have one in hand and I could tell you where the most vulnerable river reaches are in this state. I have some own personal priorities, and by that I mean Audubon priorities where we're working. And the Middle Rio Grande is such an important corridor for sandhill cranes and other migratory waterfowl and water birds as they move from their breeding grounds to their wintering grounds. That's a focus of our work. But I think there are so many river stewards across the state who would say that they have as important issues that they're facing in their communities that I would hesitate to say these are the statewide priorities. And I would hope that New Mexico Environment Department and other state water resource and natural resource agencies would look at creating a report card for New Mexico. We have a report card certainly on water quality, and the New Mexico Environment Department's 319 program assembles that information and reports where we have the most impairment. And I know they're going to be looking at that report to determine, along with community engagement, where some of these funds are spent.
And if you had to pick three major water restoration projects, what would they be?
My three wishes for this river restoration ferry would be to restore some portion of nature's share of water. I think our riverways are over-appropriated, and in that process, we have forgotten that rivers themselves need water at certain times and in certain quantities to remain healthy. I think my second wish would be to increase public funding for river restoration. Audubon's been working to expand public funding for river restoration for years, and I can tell you from a decade of experience, finding funding to improve the health of rivers is hard. More often than not, you're scraping the bottom of the cookie jar, and state funds, in this case, can really make the difference. You know, we did a quick survey in 2013, and I was able to identify 12 river restoration projects across the state that were looking for funding, and their funding needs were close to $3 million. And these state funds will allow us to leverage federal and private funds and in-kind contributions to do a better job at keeping New Mexico rivers in good condition. I think my third wish would be to help restore our native cottonwood and willow gallery forests that used to occur in greater abundance, at least down here on the lower Rio Grande, where I'm from, in Las Cruces, and just do a better job appreciating our native riparian vegetation that not only provides shade and a place to relax and recreate, but also provides a lot of resources, cover, food, what have you, for wildlife. And New Mexico's wildlife is really rich, and we need to do a good job protecting it.
And where can people go for more information?
You can learn more about our river work at newmexico.audubon.org. And we also have a Westwide initiative underway, and it's called the Western Rivers Action Network. And to learn more about that, our efforts across the entire West to protect our rivers, if you Google conservation.audubon.org/Western Rivers Action Network, you can learn about our efforts across the West.
Anything else you'd like to add?
Yeah, we talked about the benefits from healthy rivers, and I think one that isn't highlighted enough is that outdoor recreation in New Mexico is a big business, and healthy rivers can offer spectacular outdoor recreation opportunities when they're in good condition. And also that another economic benefit of this program is jobs for New Mexicans. Past funding for river restoration has supported the work of 68 contractors, you know, everything from engineers to heavy equipment operators to greenhouses, and 94% of those were New Mexico businesses or individuals. So when we keep our rivers healthy, we're also doing a good job keeping our economy healthy.
Beth Bardwell from the New Mexico Audubon Society, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR, which will continue in just a moment.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by Greenfire Times, a new monthly publication focusing on all things green, including health, healing, organic foods, nutrition, permaculture, sustainability, green-collar jobs, and renewable energy. Greenfire Times is distributed at newsstands from Albuquerque to Taos. More information and an online edition can be found at greenfiretimes.com.
19 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. This afternoon in Santa Fe, existing small businesses can attend a workshop intended to loan the technical expertise of our two nearby national laboratories. It's a program established by the Economic Development Department with support from both Los Alamos and Sandia. Joining us now to talk more about the initiative is Belinda Snyder, Program Manager with the Technology Transfer Division at LANL. Belinda, as we understand, not only does this initiative provide free technical assistance from the labs, but in some instances, there's also an opportunity for competitive funding, ranging anywhere between $20,000 and $100,000. Give us the overview on this.
Absolutely. So the New Mexico Small Business Assistance Program has been in place since 2000, and it allows for both Los Alamos National Lab and Sandia National Lab to provide technical assistance up to a certain amount to small businesses at no cost to them if they have a challenge that we have the expertise to help solve.
And let's talk more about the type of projects that typically find themselves seeking advice. Is it something on the order of, say, a company that has developed a new type of engine seeking the technical means of making it more efficient?
Absolutely. What we do is we act as a technical consultant. So if a company brings us a problem where they have a certain technical design or a certain material where they need more information about whether or not it works within a particular environment or what materials might be best to use in a product, we can look at their design or we can look at their current prototype and we can actually give them some advice on what best materials to use or, you know, what particular elements of the design they may want to focus on. It just runs the gamut. It's everything from, companies who are designing new cosmetics to companies that are designing new ways to provide energy. So it's really across the board. You don't have to be a high-tech company to leverage our service.
And of today's event, is it still open to those concerns who may have interest, or was there a pre-registration necessary?
Anybody who would like to attend is welcome to attend. Today's session is about a special type of project that we do under NMSBA. They're called leverage projects, and it's when a suite of companies, two or more, have a similar problem, and we can do one technical assistance amongst those companies to help solve that similar problem. So we've done a lot of these types of projects for farms and ranches, companies where they have a shared technical need.
Today is just one of several gatherings over the next few days, yes?
Yes. We're actually holding three sessions. There's the one from 2 to 3 today at the Santa Fe Business Incubator. Tomorrow we will be at the Innovation Parkway Office Center in Albuquerque. And on Thursday we will be at the Los Alamos Small Business Center in Los Alamos.
Apart from these meetings, can interested parties contact you across the calendar year?
Absolutely. So we are open year-round for applications for the individual project requests. These sessions are specific to the leverage project, but you'll get enough information here to understand what we might be able to do for you on an individual basis as well.
And the requirements for participation, do they preclude those businesses just getting off the ground?
Well, they have to have a tax ID number so that we can verify that they are a New Mexico small business. But having said that, we work with companies that are very early stage who have basically just established their company and are just defining what their product is going to be. So we start from, companies that are very nascent to companies that have been a small business in New Mexico for 20-plus years.
Belinda Snyder, Program Manager with the Technology Transfer Division at LANL, many thanks for joining us. And that meeting in Santa Fe today begins at 2 p.m. at the Santa Fe Small Business Incubator at 3900 Paseo del Sol. At noon, we'll continue in just a moment.
Hi, this is Jim Hightower saying, let's get radioactive together. I'm coming back to Santa Fe for another hell-raising hoorah to benefit your terrific community radio station, KSFR. In these days of corporate personhood and dark money super PACs, we need independent media voices like KSFR more than ever. So please join me on Saturday, August 24th at 5:30 at the Museum Hill Cafe. Tickets are $35 and include snacks and music from Swing Soleil. To make a reservation, call our friends at KSFR 428-1527. That's 428-1527. I'll see you on August 24th.
24 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. A new energy efficiency training program is housed at the Santa Fe Community College. KSFR News reporter Charles Maynard joins us now to file this report.
Thanks to a grant from the Reinvestment and Recovery Act a few years ago, New Mexico in general, and Santa Fe in particular, have become the home of a program designed to make lower-income housing more efficient. Amanda Evans is the director of the New Mexico Energy Smart Academy and the Center for Excellence for Green Building and Energy Efficiency.
Almost 3 years ago, with the ARRA funding, the American Reinvestment and Recovery Act funding that went out nationally, the Department of Energy gave grants to 33 states to develop national weatherization training centers. And these were training centers around energy efficiency for low-income housing. New Mexico received one of the grants through the New Mexico Mortgage Finance Authority, and they chose Santa Fe Community College to house the New Mexico Energy Smart Academy. So we've been doing very comprehensive energy efficiency training here for almost 3 years. We have a pretty fantastic lab space set up with a little house even inside the lab. We have lots of hands-on props. We have a large mobile training unit that we can take around the state. And basically, we do all of the training for our state for the low-income weatherization program. The grant was given almost 3 years ago, and we moved into a wonderful space at the Santa Fe Community College in their new Trades and Advanced Technologies Center, and we've been operating out of there ever since.
There are different job training tracks at the academy.
We train four different job categories, and those are the four categories that we have just been accredited in. And one of them is for the installer, the person that goes in and does the hands-on work. And so they'll come here and they'll do a lot of hands-on work, learning how to retrofit houses for energy efficiency. We also train crew leaders, the people that are going to lead the guys that do the work. We train energy auditors, and they're the people that will go in and assess houses for, you know, what energy efficiency retrofits make sense for that house. And then we train the quality control inspectors, who are the people who go in after the fact and make sure that the job really was done to the right quality.
A wide variety of students are eligible for training.
Some of them have worked in the field, but we do training for different agencies that are funded through the Mortgage Finance Authority from the Department of Energy. And, for example, one of those is Rocky Mountain Youth Corps, which is an AmeriCorps group up in Taos. And they'll send down cohorts to go through complete training sessions here. And they're maybe 18 to 23-year-olds, and they're great. I mean, they're really enthusiastic, and they take it on, and then they go back up to northern New Mexico, and they're working, helping retrofit homes for people.
A number of New Mexicans have taken advantage of the programs.
Well, the classes that we do specifically for the weatherization program, which is, they're fairly comprehensive, and for example, the energy auditor class is about 28 days full-time, and the other classes are comparable. We've had maybe 150 to 200 people take the full training, go through those. And then we also had a Department of Labor workforce training grant around energy efficiency green building. And I think we did 240 people through that grant. But those were shorter classes. Some of those were 5 days. Some of them were just maybe 1 day.
Tuition assistance is available.
Right now, if you're working in the federal low-income weatherization program, which people are in New Mexico, they get funded to take the training for free through that program. Apart from that, we've had people that, through Workforce Investment Act, come here and take training. So basically, if you're unemployed, you can go down to your one-stop office, and they will fund you in to take this training.
For more information, contact Ms. Evans.
And my phone is 505-428-1805, and my email is amanda.evans@sfcc.edu.
Amanda Evans of the Energy Smart Academy.
I'd just like to add about the accreditation that we just received. That was a national accreditation through IREC, which is the Interstate Renewable Energy Council, and they were tasked by the Department of Energy and the National Renewable Energy Labs to come up with an accrediting program for training centers that are offering these kinds of classes. It's extremely rigorous. It took us almost a year to go through the application process, and we've just been accredited. We were one of two nationally who've been accredited for all four of our core programs, and there are only nine in the country who are actually accredited at this stage. So we're pretty proud of that.
For KSFR News, I'm Charles Maynard.
Did you know a baby cannot be enrolled in daycare without a supply of disposable diapers? The Food Depot introduces the Diaper Depot, an initiative to provide diapers to families in need. The Diaper Depot will be hosting several diaper drives in Santa Fe on Saturday, August 24th, between 10 and 2. Stop by Sam's Club, Whole Foods on Cerritos, or any Smith's or Albertsons to donate a package of diapers or make a financial contribution. Learn more at thefooddepot.org.
29 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. Here in the City Different, there are some changes coming to our refuse and recycling services. Here to discuss them is Cindy Padilla, the Division Director with Environmental Services for Santa Fe. Cindy, let's talk about these changes.
Well, actually, it's not a lot of changes in the actual services. It's a change in service days. The city and the county have finalized their annexation agreement for the southern part of the city into the city limits. And as part of that annexation, you know, we're going to be adding services to city residents. So this will be new service. It'll be trash and recycling service, curbside recycling service for people in the southern part of the city, which will be annexed now into the city. And for existing city residents, in order to accommodate Friday service, which is where we are on and during the week, we're moving some of our residents up to Thursday. We're moving some of our Thursday current residents up to Wednesday. And some of our Friday residents are also moving to Monday. But we've been out, and we actually have staff that are putting tags on your cans. So if your service day is going to change, you should see a bright colored tag on your can the week prior. So we'll put it out the week before the change in service.
With the annexation, how many customers are you adding?
You know, we're adding about 5,500 new customers, and they'll be serviced on Fridays. And we're actually kind of phasing it in. We had initially thought that we were going to do a kind of a blanket service change and be able to pick everybody up pretty much at once. And turns out, you know, we had to work out a few arrangements with some of our private haulers, which is a good thing, and everyone's been great about it. But in order to do that and be able to provide seamless customer service for changing, you know, people changing services, we decided to it might be better to phase it in. But I think by the middle of October, we should have all 5,500 new customers serviced by the city.
And the increased number of customers obviously means an increase in both personnel and equipment, yes?
Yeah, we've actually added three new trucks. We have a new automated side loader for residential. We have a recycling truck for the curbside recyclables. And then a front load truck for commercial. The staff, we've added new staff, but they were actually positions that we've had in the division that we just hadn't filled for a couple of years in anticipation of the annexation. So, you know, we're not technically adding new staff. These are positions that have been budgeted within the city before. It's just positions we hadn't filled. So right now, you know, we're just going to be filling all of our positions within the division, and once we get into full swing of service, we may need to hire an additional maintenance worker for recycling, but we haven't quite made that final determination yet.
Is this going to be an expensive adjustment for Santa Fe?
It's an investment, definitely, but because our solid waste division is an enterprise fund, we don't receive any revenues or money from the general fund. All of our operating budget is generated by rates that we charge to customers. And we've done financial analysis, and with the additional 5,500 customers paying the residential rate, which is still the cheapest in the state, we're at $13.60, including tax, per month for the service, which includes, you know, your automated garbage collection and the curbside recycling for $13.60. Can't even go to the movies for that. But we pick it up once a week. We did calculate that in our rates. We calculated revenues, additional expenses. So, you know, we continually do rate analysis every year on our cost of service, revenues that are generated. So, yes, I mean, the short answer is it is an investment, but it's an investment that we've planned for.
If people forget to put out their trash on the new day, what should they do?
We really want to try to accommodate people that, you know, maybe missed it or something, and they just need to call our office at 955-2200, and we'll send somebody out to pick it up. A lot of times I think what happens is people see their neighbors, and it reminds them, you know, oh, yeah, today is the new day. But if you do have your service missed, you know, please call us, 955-2200, and we'll make sure that we service you and send you a reminder that your service day is changed.
Anything you'd like to add?
You know, I just wanted to add, and with the new curbside recycling program and for the county residents, you know, that haven't had recycling, we certainly hope that people will continue to participate in the curbside recycling program or recycle in their businesses. I mean, it's a service that's provided in the city and something that, you know, we should all take advantage of as we really, you know, stop and think about the resources that we have available on the planet, and we can each do something every day if we just remember to recycle that can, that bottle, that paper.
Cindy Padilla for the City of Santa Fe, many thanks for joining us here at noon. 12:35 here in the newsroom, just past the bottom of the hour, is the perfect time to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagan.
On my cell phone, I have an entry labeled Police Non-Emergency. It's a number I call to let police know of a situation that, while currently is a non-emergency, has the potential of losing the definer non. What are my criteria? I have no idea, really. It's just a feeling, though often it's not that subtle. The situation just slaps you in the face. I was driving west on West Alameda, another coincidence, and I just crossed St. Francis. There's a joke there about crossing St. Francis, but I'll save it. Standing on the median by Burger King was a man facing west, and he appeared to be pretending to be surfing, using the median as a surfboard. Well, appreciating the man's imagination, I worried about him falling and being run over, so I called the police non-emergency number and told the dispatcher about the guy using the median as a surfboard. The dispatcher laughed when I told her. I don't know if he was drunk or just riding the waves. That almost makes sense. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagan.
That will conclude this edition of At Noon, KSFR's extended noon news hour. Dan Garrity with you here at the news desk, with many thanks to my contributing colleague today, Charles Maynard. We'll be back with more news up and for New Mexico for you tomorrow, and as always, we hope you join us.